It's Illume Group's Andrea Lay, Packed View's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Wooden Hill Shri, and I'm PVSB from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 22nd, and of course it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We found them boundlessly intriguing. We hope you do too. Brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com. It's retail right now. Leading off, Shri.
Thank you, Peter. And Amazon Live introduces a new shoppable ad-supported channel to Prime Video called Freevee, featuring 24/7 interactive content from celebrities and brands, leveraging its Shop the Show technology to enhance viewer engagement and boost its advertising revenue. At least that's the plan. The channel leverages Amazon's Shop the Show technology to enable viewers to easily purchase content seen on the TV screen via a mobile device. The CPG guys and I are excited to try this out, and we will report back how it performs back here in one of our blogs on the CPG guys. So I look forward to that. Over to you, Peter, for what's going on with Walmart Marketplace.
Thanks, Shri. Walmart Marketplace opens Omni service to auto sellers. Walmart is enabling customers to order eligible tires from Walmart sellers and have them shipped to a local Walmart store for easy installation at their auto care centers. Walmart sellers have added 12,000 unique items, including specialty tires, to provide nearly 40,000 marketplace offers that are installation eligible at 2,300 auto care centers around the country. The expanded tire selection complements Walmart's existing auto services that include accessories and battery services, while giving sellers more access to Walmart's omnichannel customer base. Over to you, Andrea.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Amazon begins offering Dash Carts to other grocers. Amazon has begun offering its Dash Carts to third-party grocers, expanding the checkout technology beyond Amazon grocery banners and Whole Foods market stores, according to a blog post from the company. Amazon introduces Dash Carts to non-Amazon grocery stores, starting with select locations in the Kansas City area. This rollout comes shortly after Amazon ceased its Just Walk Out technology in Amazon Fresh and Whole Foods. Customers using Dash Carts tend to spend 10% more, with over 80% of the transactions from repeat users, highlighting the cart's convenience and efficiency. Over to you, Melissa.
So Heinz has launched a new limited edition barbecue sauce. Heinz and Barbie lovers in Europe are in luck. A limited edition pink vegan mayo with barbecue sauce was launched to celebrate Barbie's 65th anniversary. Mattel and Heinz have unveiled the new Heinz Classic barbecue sauce. It will be available in the UK and Spain initially, and may be available elsewhere in the future. Additionally, there's 5,000 bottles of the new sauce available to purchase online, but they can only be shipped to the UK and Ireland. So for those of you in the US who are curious, you can do what I do and go to TikTok and search pink barbecue sauce, and you will find it.
Thank you, Melissa. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our co-hosts, Shri Rajagopalan and Peter V.S. Bond, explore how brands and retailers engage with consumers online, in-store, and everywhere in between. And now, here are Shri and Peter.
Welcome, folks, to this special Thanksgiving week Saturday episode of the CPG Guys. I'm sure after all the food coma that took place, you're now ready to get on the treadmill and actually tune back in. And what a great way to do it, by listening to the CPG Guys. So welcome back to this episode. My co-host, of course, is Mr. Peter V. Bisbond, also the VP of Partner Strategy and Development at Fetch Rewards, a mobile loyalty platform. Mr. Bond, the man with the golden voice, and should I say the radio? How are you today, sir?
The radio face, Shri? Yeah, that's me. I'm doing great, man. I am almost over my tryptophan overdose from the turkey. I'm thinking of 12 more meals that I can make with all the remaining turkey that I have in my fridge. But I am really excited about talking analytics in this special Thanksgiving episode.
Yeah, and you know what a great time of the year to be discussing analytics, Peter, because holidays are just about to hit us, and you and I at the Fresh Four a few weeks ago, about a month ago, late October, talked about a bonanza season up 12% for the holidays based on data we got from RetailWit.com. much more to come. So I can't wait to decompose our conversation on analytics and value coming from analytics from our guests today. But before I get to our guests, I want to remind our audience that all of our content can easily be found by going to a browser, typing cpgguys.com. And if you aren't already following us on LinkedIn and this growing family of the CPG guys, all you got to do is go to linkedin.com, go to the search browser, type CPG guys. There's a blue plus button that shows up. All that button does is when you click it, you get to follow us. You get to shape transformation in the industry, who comes to the show, what topics we discuss about, and actually be part of this change that we talk about for the consumer at the end of the day. Best thing about it, we don't charge. It's absolutely free for the listeners. And did you know that we are in partnership with the Network of Executive Women, also known as NEW? And in the middle of every podcast episode is an Easter egg with a message from NEW. Download, tune in, and listen. And you can also go to newonline.org/CPGguys and join the organization that way. Today, we're back at it with data and analytics, as Peter said, which is Peter's domain and home turf. I've said many times before that data is one of the most valuable commodities in CPG, and when it's converted to actionable insights, it's a game changer for brand equity growth. We've had others on the show in earlier episodes talk about the role of data and how the future of insights will be shaped by scale, speed, and agility. So we've decided to do a two-part series with Tiger Analytics, an advanced analytics and AI consulting company enabling enterprises to generate business value through data. The emergence of a new C-level title, the Chief Analytics Officer, is just one indication of how serious and attention the space has gained in the recent years. The emergence of open source big data and data science innovations has triggered a second wave in the analytics space, increasing its magnitude of positive impact delivered to businesses. Acquiring, storing, processing growing volumes of data, structured investigation-like work to discover insights, advanced analytics and machine-level learning. You all know how much I love that word, ML, that drives decisions, and an end-to-end pipeline that brings it all together can surely unlock avenues of incremental revenue, which we all crave, optimize costs, and free cash flows for businesses. Simply put, such is the mission of Tiger Analytics. And today we have, as guests on the show, their Chief Customer Officer for CPG, the Consumer Product Goods Vertical, Kishore Gumaraju, and their Omnichannel Practice Leader, Saraswati Somani. Guys, how you doing?
First of all, Peter, Sri, thank you very much. Thanks a ton for having us over at the CPG Guys. It's truly a privilege to speak to you and your audience. And hope you had a great Thanksgiving. And Peter.
We're doing, we always do awesome on the show. I'm sure you can tell. And how about you, Sari? How are you
doing? Doing great. Thanks, Sri and Peter, for having us. I have been working in the CPG and retail industry space for over 15 years now, and currently I am practice leader for omnichannel offerings at Tiger Analytics.
Kishore, before we get to the questions, would you please take a minute and tell our audience where they can easily learn more about Tiger Analytics, the solutions you offer, and then give a quick overview of what your team does?
Coming to Tiger Analytics, we are the fastest growing AI and analytics services provider with a mission of powering 1,500 plus data scientists, data ML AI engineers, information architects, percent year on year. And you can find out more about Tiger Omnichannel offerings at www.tigeranalytics/omnichannel. And both of us are also available on LinkedIn and happy to connect out there.
And of course, for the benefit of our listeners, that's www.tigeranalytics.com. All of the details that Kishore just spoke to will be available in the digital liner notes of this podcast, so you can easily click back, check back as you need to. So I'm going to jump right into it, Kishore, and I'm going to try to get into a little bit into your careers and, you know, how you all ended up at Tiger Analytics. You, of course, Kishore, I've known for a long time, and you've been at various other analytics and consulting houses. What specifically attracted you to Tiger Analytics as a chief customer officer? And what is the unique capability you see here that you feel you can enable rapid growth from? And why don't you start by telling us about the core values of the company, who the Tiger Analytics clients are, and maybe that's one of the reasons you're here.
I used to work for Unilever, and then I spent 19 years in a consulting company as a managing partner, as you mentioned. And change for me did not come very easy because Tiger is a much smaller firm compared to where I was earlier, right? The key factors that attracted me to Tiger were really, you know, the values of the company, the culture, the competency, sheer competence of the people, and the opportunity that I saw. Right? In terms of values, there are four key values that we stand by and we live by. One is excellence in whatever we do, respect for everyone, learning continuously, and freedom in the work environment. Now, these are very important to us, and you'll notice that these values are deep-rooted in creating a very respectful and thriving work environment. And hence, it's not surprising that we have the lowest attrition rate in industry amongst all our competition. We are the fastest-growing analytics firm, and we have the highest Glassdoor rating, right? And this is consistently over the last few years. Our clients, we work across CPG, retail, insurance, financial services, pharma, and services. And around 45% of our revenues actually come from CPG and retail, making it our largest and fastest growing industry concentration as well. I joined the company in 2019 August, and between then and now, we've grown. We are a 100 plus million company now with 1500 plus employees. And the key reasons for this, I think, are really four. One is at the core, we've always been a company that focuses on delivering value through AI and data science. That's what we do. That's our DNA. And this resulted in making investments in people and technology. We also have the strongest data engineering practice in industry, for example, because we made investments there. Our customer centricity. We are 100 plus million profitable company, but zero debt. Right? We have no borrowings. None of our competition has that luxury, right? We have utmost flexibility to do to our clients whatever is right for them. And we do not have investors breathing down our throat. We have very high NPS scores, very high repeat rates of business. Our approach to innovation and IP is unique. We are pioneering transparency in analytics. While industry typically tries to tie down clients with proprietary solutions and products, we give IP to our clients and help innovate with them, which really creates competitive advantage. Our clients love it about us. And human centricity in our approach. Empathy is at the core of everything we do, whether it is designing solutions for our clients or dealing with our employees. So the kind of work we do for our clients is help them frame, solve complex analytical problems using AI and analytics. Technology and data engineering services help move to a model to enable seamless access to data. Our MLOps services help deploy analytical solutions at scale. And finally, we are helping a lot of CPG companies develop decision products like data products, data science platforms, AI products for global deployment in the organization.
I'll add one more thing. We also work with clients to expose their teams to the art of possible by sharing immense possibilities of how data analytics and AI are being leveraged in the industry, and how the various technological advancements are helping to understand the consumer behavior. We believe this kind of partnership is also key to scale and growth.
Thanks for that, Kishore. I'm sorry. Sorry, my next question is actually for you. Omnichannel, this term, omnichannel commerce, is obviously what everybody's focused on. It's not just e-commerce, it's omnichannel commerce. Can you give our audience a little bit of a better understanding of where Tiger Analytics is building out its set of solutions, and what are ultimately the outcomes that you're trying to drive success for your CPG clients?
Thanks, Peter. That's a great question. Omnichannel landscape continues to evolve. Retailers have become media houses. Retail media is about return on ad spends and performance marketing, but it can also be a place to build your brand. There is a continuous rise of new DTC and fulfillment models. Also, rise and growth of aggregators is on as they continue to extend partnerships and drive growth. There's also a heavy focus on localization and personalization. So, omnichannel commerce is the new normal. Shop online, fulfill anytime, anywhere. Now the question before brands is no longer about omnichannel strategy, but business strategy in an omnichannel world. There are a few questions that brands have today. How do I maximize my ROI? How do I create a sustainable multiplier effect? How do I impact consumer experience with the brand? In order to support this, we have three key offerings. One, omnichannel performance measurement, which is based on a robust data foundation. Second, omnichannel brain, which is a range of analytical use cases. Third, omnichannel ways of working, which is essentially a set of processes, framework, and a human-centric approach to drive collaboration across function with design at the core of it.
And with these offerings, I'd like to add that, you know, we've been working with several CPG companies, leading CPG companies, food and beverage and personal product space, to help deliver and have achieved some stellar results. Like, for instance, we've helped establish a data foundation and performance measurement framework for a large CPG company across their, you know, integrated business planning, the net revenue management, as well as manufacturing intelligence program to deliver $30 million in sale in value. We've saved over $35 million through out-of-stock reduction by improving forecasting models for a leading food and beverage player. For another large food organization, we have developed a glide path of savings of $150 million plus over the next 5 years, implementing omni-channel sales attribution for leading retail customers.
You know, what I heard you say is you're creating $150 million value stream somewhere. In another place, it's $30 million in a given project that you've actually implemented in, perhaps in forecasting, perhaps in actually savings in the omnichannel space. To me, what I hear is you're trying to maximize ROI on any investments that are being made or all kinds of investments in the omnichannel space. Little cliche, but Sari, this question is for you. How do you go about maximizing ROI on all spends?
Thanks, Sri. Today, retailers and supply relationships are more important than ever. When it comes to understanding retailers' media proposition to unlock incremental revenue opportunity, that's indeed a capability area for us. Let me take an example of a large food major. We help them in answering three key questions: which media activations drive maximum incremental sales, how the impact varies by geography, retailer, category, brands, when to change the activation based on the saturation. We faced a few challenges while embarking on this journey. There was no single budget owner, this lack of a uniform measurement, siloed ways of working, lack of cross-team collaboration, over and under investing due to suboptimal value creation. This resulted into missing profitable opportunities. As a first step, we started with the top four retailers, which contributed to 70% of total spends in the US and UK markets across several categories and brands. Next step is to scale it to rest of the retailers. We started first looking at what are the list of data sources available. So we brought the retail media, offline media, syndicated, POS, trade, control factors together. We harmonized and transformed. We created variables, features by applying transformations, created modeled data. Using advanced analytic techniques, we built omni-channel sales attribution model. Post that, we contextualize the results to online and offline spends to create ROI for each drivers. In this journey, what we have uncovered so far is ROI of an activation for a given retailer is highest when it is combined with a promotion. Hybrid design formats offer higher ROI versus a fully branded or a price pack one. We are suggesting to invest in banners which are popular at a concerned retailer. Favorites are popular at a certain retailer, while search and checkout are popular for another one. We also have to ensure that what are our baselines while investing in these campaigns. Based on all these learnings and insights, we created a playbook, which is a ready reckoner for brands to answer business questions like when to introduce a price change, when to add a promotion, looking at which design format would offer better, and how to work on activations with retailers. Now, building omni-channel capability requires extensive knowledge of data sources, continuously evolving retail media, cross-channel integrations, and ML techniques. We have built these accelerators, which helps to drive speed and time to activation. The solution so far created for top four retailers in two markets has delivered $100 million in terms of value, and it will go up to $500 million as we scale it to other retailers across other markets, say, for next 3 years.
Thank you for that. Sorry, that's very helpful. And clearly you guys have built capabilities to identify through analytics how you can improve ROI throughout the process. One of the areas that's particularly of interest to me, I've spent quite a number of years in the content space, building out content that that contributes to the digital shelf. So I'd love to hear from you what you think of the role that content plays in effective search for brands on the digital shelf.
Thanks, Peter. I'm glad you brought this up. We worked with a leading pet food company to improve search by displaying their products on the top of the page for Amazon. As we know that Amazon's algorithm focuses heavily on relevance and it controls the organic search ranking. We looked at three key metrics here: product content, which is title, bullets, description, keywords, sales performance matrix, and last but not the least, product listing performance. All this definitely impacts relevance. In addition to that, we considered availability, pricing, sales velocity, and profitability as other factors. Now, let me remind here that profitability is extremely critical for Amazon. Otherwise, the products would be part of a crap list, which is can't realize any profits, which would lead to delisting. The combination of these levers and paid search helps in improving the search rank. Here are some of the insights. Though price is an important factor for some of the dog and cat SKUs, it's not everything. The listing performance was poor on some of the SKUs, which impacted the search rank. Coming next is availability. Availability was key, and as the products were out of stock for a couple of days, the search rank dropped and it took about a week to get it back. Now, content is core of all solutions, and I can't emphasize enough on the importance of user-generated contents. Ratings and reviews, which are voice of the customers, analyzing them helps in understanding what are the reasons why our star ratings have gone down and what are necessary interventions needed. This helped our client in improving their search rank, which helped in driving conversion and incremental sales. Also, targeting the right keywords helps in improving the conversion and customer acquisition.
Yeah, another thing I wanted to just add here is, you know, to what Sari mentioned, is she talked about ratings and reviews and content. Content can also help drive innovation in a very significant manner. So let me give you an example, right? So our client here, again, in the pet nutrition space, had two key problem statements. One is wanted to identify trends and quantify the value of opportunities to influence the strategic planning, renovation, and innovation. And the second was to determine the growth drivers to develop an investment plan to support it. Now, this requires a tremendous amount of ability to harness and access a lot of external content in social channels, research, as well as traditional data sources. And we found some very interesting things in play. For example, trends have a life cycle of their own. They may start in social chatter, move on to baby products, then adults, and then land up in pet foods, right? So one needs to identify such patterns and determine the latency and then quantify that trend. We've developed some very advanced algorithms to help do just right this, to identify such trends and forecast the pattern, as well as to forecast the total opportunity and then determine what kind of investments are required in order to unearth the opportunity. We've done this across almost five CPG companies. In this particular case, we were able to identify $228 million worth of opportunity. And we've been with them for the last 4 years in this journey, and we've been running this as a service for them. So I think AI and analytics can play a huge role in unearthing value through content and external.
Kishore, you've referred to all these various monetary savings, investment clawbacks, as well as value that Tiger's created for a variety of your clients in different areas. One of the areas that's hot for this space, which I believe the investments are significant and the ROI is still being worked out, is the last mile fulfillment space. Why should a large brand do last mile fulfillment, and what can Tiger offer them?
Thank you, Shri. All of us went through this during the peak of COVID. When the pandemic first hit last year, we struggled to get the deliveries or pickup slots at the big box retailers or supermarkets. At that time, Instacart came to rescue and we got our deliveries in 30 minutes and continue to get today as well. We've heard this question all the time. Why bother with delivery aggregators as they are very small in terms of sales? Let me share some interesting facts here. Today, Instacart is among top 5 customers for most of the CPG customers of ours. Instacart contributes to more than 48% of online grocery delivery business. Repeat purchase is extremely high, and hence it's a very sustainable business. In addition to that, last mile providers, Instacart is not the only one player. It has whole evolving ecosystem of food services, retail aggregators, dark stores, which are additional points of distribution and also a touch point with consumers for the brand. So hopefully, the case for focus on delivery aggregators is made. Now, business in this channel have their own nuances, which creates complexity for brands and retailers. For example, what matters most on Instacart is search and availability at a local level. This may not be the case for others. So one needs to understand to adapt to these needs for the business. For a couple of large CPG companies, we have helped them in estimating what is size of price from delivery aggregators. We help them calculate the true incrementality from delivery intermediaries using a pre-post method. We also help to optimize investments on search and campaigns. We did this pilot in the US and UK market for a food major, and now we are expanding it globally. It has already generated $120 million for a client, and we see a strong growth coming up next year as well.
Hey, Kishore, in listening to the answers that you and Sari have given, it's pretty clear to me that you see AI as an anchor for intelligence. Can you explain to our audience, and particularly for our retailers in the audience, why should this matter?
Great that you asked that question, Peter. And frankly, honestly, I think no one, no retailer also should care about AI only, right? The thing is, we strongly believe that there's a lot of reference to AI without really understanding what AI is normally. So, and we are also to blame it partly there. But all a retailer really cares about is the ability to make better decisions and create better experiences for their customers, right? And that's what is really critical and most important. And now that may require measurement, data analytics, AI, machine learning, so be it, whatever tools are required. But let's look at some examples and see why this technology and these capabilities can bring about a lot of competitive advantage. So for a large beauty products retailer, we helped them build an engine to help recommend products based on the image profile as well as the past behavior of the shopper. Now, one of the challenges here is when you do this is latency. You cannot afford to build the algorithm such that the customer has to wait for 5 or 10 seconds for a response to come back. Right? The latency has to be quick, right? Therefore, we had to do a lot of performance architecture and optimization of the architecture in order to give recommendations in less than 300 milliseconds. In another case, there's a large apparel retailer that is looking at, they've introduced a new banner and are reducing the stores in the existing banner, but this new banner is growing a lot. Now, why are they doing that? Because there are new trends coming up, new health trends, and therefore they want to build that particular brand that way. But at the same time, there's a huge migration of population underway. There are very few people like Shri who move from New York to California, but usually you find that people are moving from California, right, to Texas. Now, this huge population change and shift and the changes that are happening in the environment mean that there are implications to the decisions on retail locations. Now, overall, what we did here was we established a decision support system, which is essentially looking at signals that influence demand, current as well as future. And then there are other things to consider and overlay, like demand transference, cannibalization, customer demand buildup, channel transfer, store closing impact. Now, all of this going into establish whether the new location will create an optimal market footprint or not. Right? Now, this requires a lot of AI to access that external data, and then a lot of analytics to process it. Right? Likewise, for an ad tech major which is working on behalf of brands to bid for ads on online properties, we have a real-time engine that needs to serve up ads based on the customer, the location, the time of day, etc. Right? This requires optimization of the spend, the click-through rates, as well as a great customer experience. Now, all of this requires complex analytics with a lot of performance architecture at the back of it. Right. So therefore, anyone in the retail environment needs to deal with a lot of data today, and AI capabilities and analytics is our capabilities that will help create that competitive advantage. And hence, they really don't have a choice but leverage these capabilities for their benefit.
That word cannibalization brings back a lot of old memories actually with you, Kishore, sitting in an office in Parkwood and chatting. You were at a different company. I was at a different brand. And as we were talking a lot through basically the trade promotion optimization and the effect of cannibalization. So that's funny. So I'm going to jump to two other, you refer to how AI has become a buzzword. There are two other buzzwords that I'd love into and for you to decompose and see what Tiger is doing in this space and bringing value. One is personalization and the other is segmentation. Segmentation tends to be a little bit more clearer, but personalization is just all over the place. So help us out.
Yeah, that's personalization is something that CPG companies would love to do, but then are challenged. Therefore, there is a lot to learn from retailers. Of course, retail deals with a lot more complexity, but there's a huge learning there. I'll take this example of an alcoholic beverages retailer that we work with. And see, in this particular business, there are a lot of touch points. The shopping mission is very critical because it gives a context that can help determine the nature of intervention. And intervention can be in the form of content or an offer, right? So they had done something in personalization and the business was upset that, there was not much value that they got from the initiative. When we got in, then we said, let's start looking at what you are really measuring. Right? They were measuring conversion as the key metric. And then we started looking at, is it conversion or is it net incrementality that you need to measure, right? You need to look at new metrics. It's a new mindset, right? You need a lot of experimentation in this. And then the other thing is wine is an experiential product, right? So it's not conversion, but it's really repeat. That's the important dependent variable, right? So I'll give you an example. They had done an analysis of direct mails as a campaign and overall incremental sales was looking good. Margin was break even. So the belief was that with small tweaks, this campaign should run fine. But when we did an analysis, we looked at the demand pull forward and realized that the margin was actually negative, right? In most of their categories. So therefore, we changed the campaign, we changed the categories in which they were focused on, and therefore we were able to save $6 million as a result of this particular intervention. So the key learning from this was, one is measurement is key to what you're measuring. Second is, there's a very important need to enable test and learn, because in personalization, the key thing is, how do you test and learn, and how do you therefore use that learning then to refine your offers? And testing and learning needs agility. So how do you bring that out? So what we did was we developed this platform where we had the two core models where one was a product-to-product association, the other was heuristics-based collaborative filtering as base assets. Now using this, we deployed them in various use cases. So one use case was where there was a custom word cloud for the customer saying medium-bodied dark fruit wine, right? And an offer against it when we went online. And when she was in the store, then the virtual store associate, the store associate had an app which would then give an offer and help with any sort of guidance on the product itself. Now, the same underlying assets and the platform was used for different use cases to deploy personalization. This has delivered about $20 million in value for them and also the capability to experiment and test and learn. The learning for CPG really is that, of course, as they are trying to get first party data, these methods can be certainly deployed. Second is the approaches while working with retail media, with retailers having the media companies share data, they can leverage these capabilities for personalization. But most important learning here is measurement. Measure the right thing, and that's really critical.
We heard about personalization, and I know from having run personalization at a couple of major retailers that it's great to be able to identify, but it's more important that you're actually able to activate on that identification. So sorry, can you talk to us about how Tiger Analytics helps its clients affect the activation necessary to move the needle?
Thanks, Peter. Great question. Let me highlight here with an example. Unavailability of products is considered to be the biggest reason for dissatisfaction amongst customers in the omnichannel landscape. For one of our clients, we wanted to reduce their overall out-of-stock rates. Now, out-of-stock has three key players involved: retail operations, sales, and demand planning team. All of them need to work in a sync. Hence, we started with a quick analysis, leveraging multiple sources of data to first understand the problem areas. We ran several design thinking sessions to understand the underlying problem areas and potential actions that can help to resolve this. Post design thinking sessions, we uncovered that overall size of price of priority SKUs. So we did post design thinking sessions. We developed size of price for priority SKUs across four retailers to determine the focus area. We developed 300,000 plus forecasting models. We reviewed safety stocks for priority products with out-of-stock issues. Finally, we created a curated list of actions for retail associates to take while they are in the store. This all resulted into 100 million in value creation for top four retailers. In a nutshell, activation requires adoption. Adoption requires participation and collaboration from sales, retail operations, and demand planners, and realization through process and technology.
Excellent. I'm going to go to this one of the hottest spaces in CPG and retail today, and one of the most pivotal and important spaces in CPG and retail, and that is supply chain. At the time of recording this episode, Thanksgiving 2021, we're still in the middle of a huge global supply chain crisis, and it's impacting everything from availability of product, out of stock, inflation, things of that nature. How is Tiger Analytics helping the industry navigate this and finding value?
I think that's as you said, it's a very, very, very critical thing that everyone in industry is facing today. And if COVID has shown us one thing, it is that supply chains of today were not ready, right? And if you look at the root cause, it is because companies spent a lot of time and effort working on S&OP, right? Sales and operations planning, but there was not much technology that was put into S&OE. People were still firefighting to solve problems on a day-to-day basis, but the variability and the dynamism in supply chain today is very high. And it necessitates the ability to sense and respond at a very quick speed. But tools today are just not in place. There are large package vendors who sell the vision of control towers, but no one package can really solve this play because there are far too many silos, too many technologies, too many, and like every company has their own specific nuance, right? And therefore, it's not about a solution that can solve world hunger. So what we have done is a very creative thing. What we have done is we've developed a capability approach of what we call as an autocorrective supply chain, right? Using machine learning and event sensing. So for instance, let me give you an example. For a large footwear major, we leverage this approach where they have a lot of dynamism in their distribution planning, right? And where due to out of stock current situations currently, they need to make changes in how inventory is being deployed. So we use machine learning to change the inventory deployment to meet the dynamic environment. And what we've done is by working with the distribution planner, we've actually tried to mimic the kind of decisions that they have been making. And that is what we've put in place. Now, the key elements of the solution are a very strong data architecture to be able to sense and respond, the ability to send these signals, the ability to learn from past behaviors, and enabling planners to make near real-time decisions. So that has been our approach. So it's not about putting only the planning solutions. Those are there and those can be very well, they are functioning, but it is enabling the S&OE process with the ability to sense and respond. That's where we apply.
In talking to Sheree ahead of our conversation today, and in what I've learned today, you've clearly been a part of fairly large digital transformation. So even that term digital transformation can be a little daunting to people in our audience. So first of all, can you demystify the term digital transformation and particularly apply your philosophy around scale in doing so? Because the big question for so many CPG organizations that we talk to is that how do you drive scale and adoption through digital transformation?
That's a very apt question, Peter, and thanks for asking that. The thing about a digital transformation actually is it's an overused word, just like AI. But essentially, the way I see it is it's a change in the way of working. It is a change in the way of working, which is a lot more collaborative, which uses a lot more data, and where processes are seamless. Right? Now, to make this happen, there are three key elements that I believe help drive scale. One is a human-centric design, where the solution needs to meet the mind of the user, right? If it has to be adopted, it has to meet the mind of the user. Second is agility. As we talked of testing and experimentation, there's agility required in every business process, right? And this comes through platforms and solutions that can be deployed quickly. The third is test and learn capabilities for active experimentation. There's no perfect solution on day one. So these are three key elements to help drive scale in a digital transformation. I'll take a couple of examples, right? So for a large CPG company, we are helping them define their trade architecture for a omni world, right? And trade architecture as in establishing a pay for performance mechanism, right? And the way in which they're going to speak and plan with their retailers. But this involves a huge amount of change. We can build all the analytic solutions we want, but if the sales teams are not going to adopt it, it's of no use, right? So we are working with them, conducting design sessions to understand their context, their customer reality, and providing them with solutions and handholding them through this entire change. And that's the human-centric design part of it, right? For a large CPG company, we are actually building their entire data foundation, as I mentioned earlier, right? This powers all their initiatives around net revenue management, integrated business planning, manufacturing intelligence. Now, the harmonization, the ingestion, harmonization, processing of the data is something that we've already built and built as a part of our innovation lab. Now that cuts down about 60 to 70% of the time to deploy. If you look at for a large QSR, a quick serve restaurant, we built a pricing product for them. For across 140 countries, there's something that does pricing at the level of an individual restaurant across all the 10,000 plus restaurants that they have. Now that is something that requires a solution to be built quickly for you to test, learn, and if required, make changes. Now, that is something that we have developed, our Lego blocks, as we call it, right, which we take as accelerators, which help reduce the time to deployment of solutions. And therefore, these platforms that enable experimentation and enable quick deployment of solutions is extremely critical. Therefore, it's those three things for driving scale: human-centric design, agility through platforms, and test and learn capabilities.
Wow, Peter. I'm going to bring us to a close here on this episode. First, let me recap what we heard. We heard value creation, a variety and an assortment of how value creation is being done by Tiger Analytics. Then we hit all those uncharted territories and decomposed the buzzwords in the industry. The most important one of all of them being AI, artificial intelligence. Sorry, even dropped an Easter egg by talking about crap or can't realize a profit on Amazon and what that means. And then we went ML at some point, machine learning. And then Kishore brought us back home by diving into last mile and the value Tiger Analytics could possibly provide on last mile ROI and where to focus and where to not. And then we talked content and the value of content. And finally, what that scary word digital transformation is and how to approach it and things of that nature. Thoughts, Peter?
Yeah, sure. You know that when it came to content, sorry, had me at hello. I love talking about it. And then Kishore explaining to us the fact that we can use that content, particularly user-generated content, to analyze at scale what is driving positive and negative reviews that can be addressed through innovation and improve a product performance on the digital shelf. That's the connectivity. That is what actually moves the needle. So I loved our conversation beginning to end today.
Excellent. For all audience, I'll give a reminder that you can find our content on cpgguys.com. We would love for you to join the discussion, who to bring to the show, the topics we should be talking about. Clearly on this episode, you could see that a lot of what you ask us for were clearly addressed in this episode across the board. One of the ways to do that, other than joining us, this growing family on LinkedIn.com, is by going to ratethispodcast.com/CPGguys. Leave us a rating and a review and do tell us what you like or don't like about this podcast and who you'd like to see in the topics we should be addressing. Kishore Ansari, thank you to the both of you for joining us on this episode of the CPG Guys.
Thank you very much, Sri. Thanks, Peter, again for having us.
Thank you.
Peter, a pleasure doing this week over week with you. What a power-packed episode, huh?
Sri, I'm energized to kick off the week after Thanksgiving with new focus, we've been given a lot of food for thought in this episode. I think it's going to be very appreciated by our audience to talk about, wow, all of these capabilities they need to consider that can support their growth strategy. So good stuff today. Thank you again, Shreya, as always, for joining me on the journey.
Thank you, Peter. And check out tigeranalytics.com. That's it, a wrap for this episode of the CPG Guys. See you soon on another one.
The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.